Chapter 24. I know, but I'm ready for it.
You mean the campaign against Fleetwood?
I understand there is to be a big row.
Well, he and I are used to rows.
Shadwell paused, surveying his cigar.
Why, you knew the spy meant to lead the attack?
Yes. I was offered a glimpse of the documents this afternoon.
Shadwell started up.
Why, you didn't refuse?
Mornway related the incident of Craig's visit.
I could hardly buy my information at that price, he said, and, besides, it is really Fleetwood's business this time.
I suppose he has heard the report, but it doesn't seem to bother him.
I rather thought he would have looked in today to talk things over, but I haven't seen him.
Shadwell continued to twist his cigar through his sallow fingers without remembering to light it.
Why, you're determined to reappoint Fleetwood? He asked at length.
The governor caught him up.
Why, you're the fourth person who has asked me that today.
You haven't lost faith in him, have you, Hadley?
Not an atom, said the other with emphasis.
Well then, what are you all thinking of, to suppose I can be frightened by a little newspaper talk?
Besides, if Fleetwood is not afraid, why should I be?
Because you'll be involved in it with him.
The governor laughed.
What have they got against me now?
Shadwell, standing up, confronted his friend solemnly.
Tease that Fleetwood bought his appointment 2 years ago.
Bought it of me?
Why didn't it come out at the time?
Because it wasn't known then.
It has only been found out lately.
Known found out?
This is magnificent.
What was my price, and what did I do with the money?
Shadwell glanced about the room, and his eyes returned to Mornway's face.
Look here, John, Fleetwood is not the only man in the world.
The only man?
The only attorney general.
The spy has the lead trust behind it, and means to put up a savage fight.
Mudsticks, and, Hadley, is this a conspiracy?
You're saying to me, just what Ella said this afternoon.
At the mention of Mrs. Mornway's name, a silence fell between the two men, and the governor moved uneasily in his chair.
You are not advising me to chuck Fleetwood, because the spy is going to accuse me of having sold him his first appointment, he said at length.
Shadwell drew a deep breath.
Why, you say yourself that Mrs. Mornway gave you the same advice this afternoon.
Well, what of that?
Do you imagine that my wife disripped? The governor broke off with an exasperated laugh.
Shadwell, leaning against the mantelpiece, looked down into the embers.
I didn't say the spy meant to accuse you of having sold the office.
Mornway stood up slowly, his eyes on his friend's averted face.
The ashes dropped from his cigar, scattering a white trail across the carpet which had excited Mrs. Nimick's envy.
The office is in my gift. If I didn't sell it, who did?
He demanded.
Shadwell laid a hand on his arm.
F for heaven's sake, John, who did? Who did? The governor violently repeated.
The two men faced each other in the closely curtained silence of the dim, luxurious room.
Shadwell's eyes again wandered, as if summoning the walls to reply.
Then he said, I have positive information that the spy will say nothing if you don't appoint Fleetwood.
And what will it say if I do appoint him?
That he bought his first appointment from your wife.
The governor stood silent, immovable, while the blood crept slowly from his strong neck to his lowering brows.
Once he laughed, then he set his lips and continued to gaze into the fire.
After a while he looked at his cigar, and shook the freshly formed cone of ashes carefully upon the hearth.
He had just turned again to Shadwell, when the door opened and the butler announced,
Mr. Fleetwood.
The room swam about Shadwell, and when he recovered himself, Mornway, with outstretched hand, was advancing quietly to meet his guest.
Fleetwood was a smaller man than the governor.
He was erect and compact, with a face full of dry energy, which seemed to press forward with the spring of his prominent features, as though it were the weapon with which he cleared his way through the world.
He was in evening dress, scrupulously appointed, but pale and nervous.
Of the two men, it was Mornway who was the more composed.
I thought I should have seen you before this, he said. Fleetwood returned his grasp and shook hands with Shadwell. I knew you needed to be let alone. I didn't mean to come tonight, but I wanted to say a word to you. At this, Shadwell, who had fallen into the background, made a motion of leave-taking, but the governor arrested it. We haven't any secrets from Hadley, have we, Fleetwood? Certainly not. I am glad to have him stay. I have simply come to say that I have been thinking over my future arrangements, and that I find it will not be possible for me to continue in office. There was a long pause, during which Shadwell kept his eyes on Mornway. The governor had turned pale, but when he spoke his voice was full and firm. This is sudden, he said. Fleetwood stood leaning against a high chair back, fretting its carved ornaments with restless fingers. It is sudden, yes. There are a variety of reasons. Is one of them the fact that you are afraid of what the spy is going to say? The Attorney General flushed deeply and moved away a few steps. I'm sick of mud throwing, he muttered. George Fleetwood, Mornway exclaimed. He had advanced toward his friend, and the two stood confronting each other, already oblivious of Shadwell's presence. It's not only that, of course. I've been frightfully hard worked. My health has given way since yesterday. Fleetwood forced a smile. My dear fellow, what a slave driver you are. Hasn't a man the right to take a rest? Not a soldier on the eve of battle. You have never failed me before. I don't want to fail you now. But it isn't the eve of battle you're in, and that's the main thing. The main thing at present is that you promised to stay in with me, and that I must have your real reason for breaking your word. Fleetwood made a deprecatory movement. My dear governor, if you only knew it, I'm doing you a service in backing out. A service why? Because I'm hated, because the Lead Trust wants my blood, and will have yours too, if you appoint me. That's the real reason, then you're afraid of the spy? Afraid, the governor continued to speak with dry deliberation. Evidently, then, you know what they mean to say. Fleetwood laughed. One needn't do that to be sure it will be abominable. Who cares how abominable it is if it isn't true? Fleetwood shrugged his shoulders and was silent. Shadwell, from a distant seat, uttered a faint protesting sound, but no one heeded him. The governor stood squarely before Fleetwood, his hands in his pockets. It is true, then? He demanded. What is true? What the spy means to say, that you bought my wife's influence, to get your first appointment. In the silence, Shadwell started suddenly to his feet. A sound of carriage wheels had disturbed the quiet street. They paused and then rolled up the semicircle to the door of the executive mansion. John! Shadwell warned him. The governor turned impatiently. There was the sound of a servant's steps in the hall, followed by the opening and closing of the outer door. Your wife, Mrs. Mornway! Shadwell cried. Another step, accompanied by a soft rustle of skirts, was advancing toward the library. My wife? Let her come, said the governor. She stood before them in her bright evening dress, with an arrested brilliance eye of aspect like the sparkle of a fountain suddenly caught in ice. Her look moved rapidly from one to the other, then she came forward, while Shadwell slipped behind her to close the door. What has happened? She said. Shadwell began to speak, but the governor interposed calmly. Fleetwood has come to tell me that he does not wish to remain in office. She murmured. There was another silence. Fleetwood broke it by saying, it is getting late. If you want to see me tomorrow, the governor looked from his face to Ella's. Why yes, go now, he said. Shadwell moved in Fleetwood's wake to the door. Mrs. Mornway stood with her head high, smiling slightly. She shook hands with each of the men in turn. Then she moved toward the sofa and laid aside her shining cloak. All her gestures were calm and noble, but as she raised her hand to unclasp the cloak, her husband uttered a sudden exclamation. Where did you get that bracelet?
I don't remember it.
This? She looked at him with astonishment.
It belonged to my mother. I don't often wear it.
I shall suspect everything now, he groaned.
He turned away, and flung himself with bowed head in the chair behind his writing table.
He wanted to collect himself, to question her, to get to the bottom of the hideous abyss over which his imagination hung. But what was the use? What did the facts matter? He had only to put his memories together. They led him straight to the truth. Every incident of the day seemed to point a leering finger in the same direction, from Mrs. Nimick's allusion to the imported damask curtains to Greg's confident appeal for rehabilitation.
If you imagine that my wife distributes patronage, he heard himself repeating inanely, and the wall seemed to reverberate with the laughter which his sister and Greg had suppressed.
He heard Ella rise from the sofa and lifted his head sharply.
Sit still, he commanded.
She sank back without speaking, and he hid his face again.
The past months, the past years, were dancing a witch's dance about him.
He remembered 100 significant things.
Oh, God, he cried to himself, if only she does not lie about it.
Suddenly he recalled having pitied Mrs. Nimick because she could not penetrate to the essence of his happiness.
Those were the very words he had used.
He heard himself laugh aloud.
The clock struck. It went on striking interminably. At length he heard his wife rise again and say with sudden authority, John, you must speak.
Authority. She spoke to him with authority.
He laughed again, and through his laugh he heard the senseless rattle of the words, if you imagine that my wife distributes patronage.
He looked up haggardly and saw her standing before him.
If only she would not lie about it.
He said, you see what has happened.
I suppose someone has told you about the spy.
Apostrophe, who told you?
Greg?
He interposed.
Yes, she said quietly.
That was why you wanted, why I wanted you to help him.
Yes.
Oh, God.
He wouldn't take money?
No, he wouldn't take money.
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.